Postscript. Mary said it was the pressure. It was only after he'd finished the job that the physical effect of those years in Westminster came home to roost for David Petrie. At any rate, while he'd been mucking in on the foundations for the new house, he'd had a mild heart attack. The cottage hospital, small as it was, had saved his life. He'd taken things a bit easier since then. The firm could almost look after itself. The new Scottish government had accelerated house building, and in Ayrshire, Petrie Homes had a better reputation than anyone. Using the new legislation he'd brought in himself, the company was also now expanding into the construction of beautiful, traditionally designed public buildings. Bunty, who'd lost to Tony Moretti in the by-election, the PM had been furious, was working for Davy as general manager and doing a fine job. One November morning, with a bright blue sky and sharp, vivid, almost horizontal light producing incandescent colours on the larches he'd planted around the new house, Davy was outside cutting back some rose bushes. He'd just waved goodbye to Callum, a big bugger these days, but a constant delight, when he noticed a small black figure coming towards him on the new road that wound up to the house. A woman, judging by the halo of dark, crinkly-looking hair, but a tall one. He'd never seen her before in his life. Angela had served 9 months in prison. She found she almost enjoyed it. She'd worked with the prison chaplain, of course, and discovered a real talent for teaching reading and writing to her fellow unfortunates. Now she was out and sober. The Church of England had shown true forgiveness and understanding. The possibility of being the first ever female bishop in the West Country was dangling before her. But Angela didn't believe in loose ends. She'd tried very hard to understand Caroline, and she'd followed her closely, not with particularly hostile eyes, as she grappled with the almost impossible job of being Prime Minister. Lady Broderick had helped engineer her return to Peppleton. The boys were both being ghastly and were staying up at the big house, refusing to move to the vicarage. But the church was full, and the village, if anything, friendlier than it had been before. "I'm sorry to turn up unannounced, Mr. Petrie," she announced. "I think you're looking better than you used to on the telly, by the way." He straightened up and stretched out a cautious hand. "We have a mutual friend. Or we used to. I'm Angela. I felt I had to come up here to talk to you. There's so much I don't understand."
"You won't get much help from me, I'm afraid. I don't understand it either."
As he said this, David tried to imagine Caroline. He found he couldn't picture her. There was a bright, glazed oval, a sense of warmth, excitement, but no features at all. What colour were her eyes? What was the real shape of her nose, her mouth? Davy concentrated. He could see the Prime Minister's face clearly in a newspaper picture, but he couldn't remember her as a person at all. Was this the truth about political success? There was always a gap between the human being and the political mask. So much was obvious. So much was well known. But then, for a successful politician, the face and the mask must fuse. The flesh must grow into the caricature, so the politician is never off guard. Eventually, there is no space between the human being and the public figure. The takeover is complete. There can never be a lapse or a flaw or the real story. But what would you need to do to yourself to achieve that? How far would you have to go? And once you got there, what would you be capable of?
"I'm sorry to say," he said, "I think your ex-girlfriend was always a bit of a psychopath."
"But I think you loved her. We have that in common, don't we?"
"I did. We do."
Davy lowered his voice. Mary was inside, probably watching television. Probably.
"But I always had this problem. If she'd stuck by you, if she'd been the person I hoped, I'd have wanted her. But then, of course, I couldn't have had her by definition. But because she didn't, and wasn't that person, I found I didn't want her after all. Ken, being
a psychopath. I can't disagree. Poor you. But so far she's making rather a good fist of being Prime Minister, isn't she?
She is.
And do you think you need to be a psychopath to be a successful politician?
I think it helps.
But you're not a psychopath.
Angela looked around her.
You seem to me to be a happy man in a happy place.
I'm not a psychopath, no. I was, but I got out in time.
Others don't.
As they'd been talking, a small, slight, golden-headed girl no more than 8 or 9 years old had appeared and was standing beside Angela. That was curious. Davy was sure she hadn't been there before. He remembered church times. She was a wee angel. She reminded him somehow of Caroline. It was very odd. He looked straight at the vicar.
I was going to try to persuade her to stick with you, you know. I think she truly loved you. I think you were the only person she'd ever felt anything for in her whole life. I'm truly sorry about what happened.
Angela smiled. Thank you. But I've got the boys back, and I'll sort them out one day. And I haven't really lost Caroline. She gestured at the angelic-looking little girl. Davy leaned down and said quietly,
Hello, little one. Where have you come from? And what's your name?
Angela answered for them both. She won't say anything. Not to you. She's called Caroline, actually. She used to hang around the other one. Now she's been deserted. The small girl smiled, and Davy felt himself blaze with an inexplicable sense of joy. Many years later, on a cold, dry December morning across a lake beyond the willows and the gorse in one of the wild grey ziggurats of the University of East Anglia, a seminar was held. The Department of Politics had invited her 3 biographers, 4 professors of politics from other universities, and a dozen political writers from the major websites. The proceedings were being recorded and published in real time on the UEA Democracy site. The smell of coffee and fresh baking wafting through the overly warm room made some of the students in the audience restless, but it was a lively morning. The final session attempted to answer directly the question, had Caroline Phillips been the most successful Prime Minister since the Second World War? All the wearily familiar cases were made for Clement Attlee, Harold Wilson, Margaret Thatcher, and the Master. All had, in their way, found new solutions to old problems. It was the rangy Professor Emily Catherine from Cambridge who had summed up their conclusion. In returning the UK, still as one political entity just about, to the reformed EU and a global leadership role, and providing 10 years during which private companies took a much greater share of the burden of educating and supporting working people, Caroline Phillips had proved herself a modest, modern titan. By this stage, intrusive and irrelevant questions about her private life were barely discussed. She'd been much more important than that. Afterwards, enjoying a perfectly adequate early lunch, the academics and journalists chewed over their discussions. The man from the Times Mail site felt that they'd failed to confront the hardest question of all. Had she been a good person doing bad things or a bad person doing good things? The sages there agreed that there was no chance of answering such a question.